The following programming is sponsored by
MBC Media.
The views expressed do not necessarily reflect this station, its management, or Beasley Media Group. Hey, Uncle Sam, put your name at the top of his list. And the Statue of Liberty started shaking her fist. And an eagle will fly, and it's gonna be here. When you hear Mother Freedom start ringing her bell, and it'll feel like the whole wide world is raining down on you.
And good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to the Conservative Voice on WWDB. AM 860 in Philadelphia. This is Gary Heasley in the studio, and we are joined on the phone by Ada Nestor, who could not be in today. Welcome, Ada.
Hello, glad to be here. Hour two.
Hour two. This should be fun. The first hour it's great. It's very exciting to be talking about the future, isn't it? And yes. Also with us in the studio, we have Mina Quarles, who has been with us on a couple different adventures. One was the walk in Kensington. Everyone is maybe remembering because we've talked about it quite a bit. And Mina's been doing a flag wave down on the sidewalks in Philadelphia for, I don't know, since June in support of Donald Trump. Welcome, Mina.
Thank you.
And Mina, and we have another guest joining us now. There's a group that we've used. You know, we always talk about we do these Keystone Town Halls. And there's a group that we often refer to and use numbers from to help us understand the lay of the land in the country, right? And that group is called Rasmussen Reports. And their website is rasmussenreports.com. And you know, I'm on that website several times a week because it's a place to get great information. And we have with us on the phone now, Mark from Rasmussen Reports. Mark, thank you for joining the Conservative Voice here in Philadelphia.
Yeah, really happy to be here. This is my victory lap week.
You deserve it.
Thanks.
So, we
nailed it.
Oh, we did. What was it like trying to poll and predict what's going on in this crazy world where everything's changing?
Well, to be honest with you, 2020 was a much harder election. This one was a little bit easier, kind of like directionally what you'd expect if Trump was an uncertain candidate and barely squeaked it out in 2016. And then over the last 8 years, voters have seen utter chaos. There's an affordability crisis, an invasion of the southern border. And so we picked up on this massive shift to the right in our numbers, and we're helped out a little bit because we poll every night. Most of these guys will just disappear for a year or two and then poke their heads back up when it's election season. But also it helps if you're not a lying mainstream media scumbag shilling for Democrats. So that kind of made it easy. And we got laughed at for sure. I mean, we were the only ones consistently showing that Donald Trump week after week was winning the national popular vote. And I think we might have influenced the polling because they were really trying hard in September and October to manufacture fake Kamala Harris momentum. But right at the end, the polling all kind of collapsed. It's almost like they ran out of gas and realized they had to try and save their credibility. But here we are. We called a 3-point national popular vote win. That was our final call. We've hit it at 2 for most of the time. Looks like it's right at 3 right now. I think that might be the first time. If it stops here, I know they're still counting. It might be the first time we exactly got it within a tenth of a point. That's impossible. And then the states are really hard, especially again, in a post-2020 world, but we called 13 out of 14 of the states we polled in the right direction. Missed on Michigan, but we had it at Harris plus 1. It was pretty close to that. 11 out of 14 were within the margin of error, and 2 of those were just Ohio and Texas. Who could have seen the rurals just storming the polls like the way they did? So We're not perfect, but I can tell you our average polling error in the states was left by 0.8 points. That's really good, and it means essentially – that we're unbiased and certainly not the right-wing pollster everybody calls us.
It's interesting to look at the different levels of polling that have happened over the last few months. And, you know, anyone who was looking at the different pollsters and what they were releasing who were thinking critically had to have seen that there was some kind of bias being built into the polls that didn't really align with what we were seeing and feeling on the ground.
Yeah.
Being that you I think Atlas, Barris, like there are just a few pollsters who I feel like got it right this time around. What happens to the credibility or the, you know, the careers of the folks that have been, in my opinion, almost intentionally misleading folks to create a false perception, which is what, you know, why we're seeing so much hysteria right now from people who never knew this was possible because their sources were so biased?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think about that all the time. To be honest with you, there's no money in right-wing polling. Absolutely none. All the money's on the left.
There's just no money
and
on the
that's
right
why,
wing.
Well, we have to be accurate because if we're not, our business dies. And they have done a little bit better this time. I mean, they missed on average to the left by 3 or 4 points, not like 5, 6, 7, or 8. But to be quite frank with you, a lot of these people might possibly get promotions after the work they did. I really don't know. But I don't think that I see the level of introspection. What I see is people like 538's leader and then also Nate Silver coming out and putting out really horrible cope responses, try and sweep it under the rug. And look at Ann Seltzer. She threw her credibility on the ground and jumped up and down on it. And she's like, oh, gee, sorry, guys. It was one bad poll. So I don't think there will be any introspection. But I think over time, what this election showed us is that independent media is winning, and it isn't conservative, it's mainstream. So the new mainstream media is what you see on Twitter and in all those independent streams where people were watching Election Day. Nobody cared. Listen, 4 years ago when Fox News called Arizona for Biden, that was a nuclear bomb going off. I don't remember anybody talking about any cable news TV networks calling any states. They didn't care.
No. So, you know, what we saw, what we covered in the first hour before you were on is some of the incredible shift in popularity that came to Trump during this race. I mean, it's, you know, carrying 7 of 7 swing states. We spent some time talking about Michigan and the fact that in the city of Dearborn, a majority Muslim, Middle East, North African community, his support went from 11% to 43%, you know, and he beat Harris soundly there. Jill Stein picked up a large number. What I think we've seen is a massive shift. Now, Mina, who's with us here in the studio, Mina Quarles, has been deeply involved in an area down here. I'd say what, Mina, like Kensington, Port Richmond?
West Philly. Yeah. West Philly, Kensington, Port Richmond, North Philadelphia. We've been hitting a lot of areas.
And those areas were traditionally huge Trump-supporting areas then?
No. No, but I'm sure they'll be now.
Yeah. So, but what you saw in your community was a massive shift in thinking and popularity for Trump, support for this American agenda, because these people are looking around their own city and saying, I don't support what's happening anymore. The question, I guess, is how do you poll for that when you see this massive transition in these, you know, normally Democrat-aligned or inactive communities?
That's why it's really hard. Like, for instance, the Michigan endorsement, and there's 250,000 Muslim Americans in Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And that sounds like a really big number, but it's impossible to poll.
Yes.
It really is. And it's also kind of a rounding error when it comes down to party demographics. And, you know, so you look at what the previous elections were, you try and adjust a little bit for what you think of change. Oh, Republicans picked up a little bit of registration. Maybe the urban areas will have some depressed turnout. And I definitely did that. And I think that's what helped us be accurate. But let me be very clear. I think the main story looking back at this, and first off, we nailed it. By using probably the most archaic methodology in the industry, we're still doing 50% landline robodials.
Wow.
And some of these people are paying through the nose for like live operator cell phone dials and hundreds of thousands on layers of data analytics. But ultimately, to me, the biggest story is that this was a massive modern day Republican landslide in a way that turned almost every blue state 10 points to the right. And yet at the same time, the battlegrounds only shifted 1 point to the right and Trump barely swept all of them. He swept them all, but it was a really close thing. And if there had been a few other peculiarities on Tuesday night, it would have gone a different direction, I can guarantee you.
Oh, yeah.
And so all of these people that have now been welcomed into the big MAGA tent, in my opinion, the question that they should be asking, this is something I really want to try and figure out how to focus more effort on. At the end of 4 years, Trump could either leave office at the end of a chaotic term and the establishment Republicans might immediately get a candidate in that's just totally back to what they want, and D.C. conservatism will keep on doing what it's been doing for the last 30 or 40 years, or Republicans could play smash mouth, MAGA could take over the Republican Party, and they can really ask the hard questions about, with Trump winning the national popular vote, where are all the down ballot pickups? Why isn't the Senate at 60? Why don't we have a 40-50 point House majority? I think it's a really valid question.
It is.
Because the Democrats have a peculiar ability to turn out exactly what they need, exactly where they need it, time and time again, in a way that doesn't reflect the massive political shift we just saw.
It almost seems formulaic or like an algorithm.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So when we were talking before the election and people were saying, why are you... my position was that Trump, in terms of support, had massive support, and it was coming from new areas, and these people were what I called the unpollables. And I think that's what mm-hmm. you're saying, right? There are these demographics. Mina, how many people do you know that were polled in your community?
None.
That'd be
I definitely have never been polled in my life. I've never spoken to anyone that has been polled. And
yet... what we saw when we did our walk in Kensington, right, and talked to all those people, was tremendous new surges of support for Trump that were not there in 20. By the way, the homeless problem was as bad as 20. The drug problem wasn't as bad in 20. You didn't have the fentanyl zombies in the numbers they're there now. So with those problems also came support for Trump. But if you weren't walking in Kensington as we did, how would you know?
You wouldn't.
Well, I knew. And here's why. Well, because first off, I use robo-dial landlines. I have 500,000 people in this country that still love answering our polls.
Nice.
And I use online panels to get all the younger people. And here's the thing. You're never going to know anybody that's been polled before, but I can also still reach a million people.
Mm-hmm.
But you're looking at like Reuters, Ipsos, ABC, like these guys that totally missed. The Ipsos panel is only 50,000 people, and they're high on their own supply. There's like no way that they're going to pick up this movement. They have community managers with pronouns in the bio. So I picked up on a massive shift in Hispanic, Black, younger votes. The independents broke like 15 points to the right and 20 points to the right in my polling. And so I saw all that. And also all of the fundamentals, you know, the economy, all the questions that measure how good people are.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw it. But what the problem is, people are throwing mud at me now, is because I showed that Trump was winning 25-30% of the Black vote. And they say, well, look at the NBC exit poll. It only says 12% went to Trump. And here's the thing. It's like I have Black voters that pick up the landline and tell me they're going to vote for Trump. I have people on the anonymous internet panels that tell me that. You're telling me an NBC News reporter on the ground outside of polling stations going to get an accurate answer?
Right.
And this is the same NBC News that like missed 3, 4, 5 points, whatever, to the left, and you're going to trust their exit polling? The Black vote has inexorably, over the last 10 years, shifted to the right, just like the Hispanic vote, just like the younger vote, and it's offset by insane MSNBC-watching liberals.
Yes. And yeah, it's that ABC that we're expecting to get a good answer is the one that ran 5 years, 6 years of the Russia collusion hoax. I mean, they're mm-hmm. not interested in reporting accurate information. They've made that obvious with hoax after hoax, hiding Hunter Biden laptops, the whole thing of years and years of examples. They basically scream at us, I don't care what the truth is, I've got an agenda to promote. And that's why
the Seltzer poll is the perfect example of that.
Yeah. And that's why the Gallup poll of trust in corporate media now has got them down to 32%, right? Assuming they're using the same methodologies or valid new methodologies, that is about half, a little less than, I think, half of what the support was when that poll started decades ago.
Yeah, I think it's directionally correct, but it doesn't quite capture the amount of hate people have for the mainstream media.
Mm-hmm.
60% of the people I poll say that media is the enemy of the people.
Yeah. And
well,
go ahead,
when you look at the results on Tuesday, you can tell that people aren't listening anymore. The fascist, racist, sexist, transphobic, whatever labels the media wants to put on Donald Trump or his supporters, people are just tuning it out at this point. They may still be going to those sources for news, but they're not believing the hysteria that's been pushed on us to, you know, kind of convince us to vote a certain way.
Yeah, that's exactly what we saw for all of October. The media has definitely jumped the shark, but that's why I think the daily numbers we were putting. Yeah, it's right. They were putting out. So I was putting out daily numbers all fall, and I basically showed the race was locked in because everybody knows who Trump is and everybody knows who the current ruling regime is. And really, to be honest with you, Joe Biden lost the election for Kamala Harris back in the fall of 2021 when the slow speed train wreck of the Biden administration kicked off with Afghanistan. That being said, the numbers never really moved regardless of what happened in the polls. And yet you saw literally a hoax a night coming out of the mainstream media to try and just get something, desperately try and move the needle. The Puerto Rican joke didn't matter. Liz Cheney, you know, that didn't matter. In fact, most Republican voters probably do want to send her to Ukraine.
That's right.
So, I mean, it was just totally desperate at the end. And the thing is that I think Donald Trump probably did pick up a bunch of voters at the end, but that wouldn't show up in the polling. And but the polling was starting to break down in the last week or two anyways. But I think the Rogan thing, you know, listen, he got to where our number was, but a lot of stars aligned to get him there. And again, there was a 15-minute period there on Tuesday night where I thought it was going to go the other direction.
Wow.
I don't know. Somebody in Madison, Wisconsin probably messed up and shouldn't have dropped all of their urban ballots that night. But I really think that they thought they could sweep the Rust Belt. And when they realized they couldn't, then that's when there was capitulation.
Well, and
can I,
before there was capitulation, there were bomb threats called into some of the places in Pennsylvania. Yeah, many of the counties in Pennsylvania had bomb threats. We really thought that those 18 million phantom voters were coming back. And the question is, how do you pull the 18 million voters that disappeared?
Yes, that was going to be my question, actually.
Well, so we poll more on election integrity than any other pollster. We're one of the few that acknowledges it. And I think our elections are across the board absolutely ridiculously fraudulent. And voters inherently know this because 66% of voters said going into this election, they thought the outcome was going to be affected by cheating. The problem is there's never any accountability. I think probably one of the reasons that people don't look into more is that I think a lot of Republicans may be complicit in it. But everybody's directionally correct, but I'm not sure about the numbers. So I will say I do think, I mean, listen, 20% of all voters in 2020 said that they got at least one extra mail-in ballot. They were literally flying around in the air. You could find one on the side of the road. And, you know, and so I think Republicans probably benefited a little bit from that, too, although not nearly as much as Democrats. And also there was a concerted effort in the battlegrounds to get Biden his 0.03% of the vote that he needed to carry him over the finish line. But what you're seeing now is they're still counting. A lot of votes have to go in. I think Republicans will be in the upper 70s, which would be an increase for them. And Democrats will probably finish out in the mid-70s. So that's maybe going to be a 5, 6, 7 million decrease. I think there are probably 5 to 7 million votes that were just, you know, unicorn farts or whatever. Just nobody knows. But then I do think there were some demoralized Democrats. So it's really hard. I think the takeaway, though, is that this is probably one of the Republicans' last opportunities to put together an election integrity jihad and really bring the heat to these people, especially since all this stuff is still within the statute of limitations.
Interesting.
Yeah, I don't think that we can just cough this up to only a depressed voting population. I think that we certainly can, you know, say that voters not having a real part in their primary system leaves them a little uninspired come November. I mean, I think if they didn't learn that lesson this year, then they're fools overall.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what the Democrats do, because by and large, their values that are core to their platform aren't reflected by the vast majority of Americans. And that's not a critical weakness for them, because they can always win potentially on the cult of personality. But I'm looking at their bench right now, and it doesn't look that great. And so that's going to be a big problem. And at some point, the opportunity to internally reform, if they can do it, will be a bigger upside than continuing on the course they're on. That's what I'm looking for a voice of sanity. And I've already heard some people call for it, but it doesn't really look like it's taken off right now. But that would be better for the country because it would certainly shift the overthrow window back left. It's just crazy. Republicans want conservative stuff and never get it. And left, the Democrats don't want leftist stuff, but it keeps getting forced down everybody's throat.
Well, and I think the vote this week certainly answered that. I mean, Americans said, this is crazy. You guys went too far. We need to pump the brakes a little bit and rethink about the direction we want our country to go in. I've seen two sides. I've seen some Democrats be a little bit retrospective. I think Claire McCaskill, the morning after the election on Morning Joe, was pretty decent and reflective and, you know, said maybe we need to look at ourselves. But then I watched The View and we were all evil and bad. Yeah. And, you know, so I didn't see too much retrospection on their program. I hope that we
see, you know, it, Chuck Schumer was shaking everybody's hand and asking for unity, too. I will say, I don't think, and I, again, this is contextual from a whole lot of questions we've asked. I don't really think Republicans want to see Republican politicians on Capitol Hill shaking hands and slapping backs right now. I don't think. I think they want to see retribution like Donald Trump was talking about and accountability. And what will be interesting is, regardless, I think the Democrat message is in disarray. I don't think the talking points are necessarily going out in a unified manner in the 4 a.m. dump anymore. But that will happen at some point. What will be interesting to see is there's a couple of key things that happen between now and election day, you know, certification of the vote, Donald Trump's sentencing, potentially messaging around people that he's going to try and get appointed. And those are all opportunities for, if Democrats do want unity, to put their money where their mouth is. But I have a feeling there's probably going to be some really vociferous opposition to some of the people that Trump chooses, because I think he's going to go after the accountability.
Yeah, I do too. You know, last night we did a town hall, a Keystone town hall. We do these every couple of weeks. And we put up the video of Letitia James saying, we're going to come at Donald Trump with everything we've got, right? I'm paraphrasing, but that was the message. And then we put up Mike Adams, I think it was, saying, we're not going to handle this the way we did last time. We're going to come at you hard if you do that. If you go after Donald Trump's rights or anyone else's rights and abuse your power, we're going to fight back. And the room exploded in applause because, to your point, people are just they're absolutely frustrated and exhausted by this idea that we have to sit by and watch the government exceed its authority, invade their lives, spend hundreds of billions of dollars everywhere in the world and throughout the country on things that are nonsense, billions of dollars to get a couple of electric charging stations done. People are simply finished with that, and I do think that the American people realize that this can't be a slow, gradual, drag-out process. The comparable I was using last night was Jack Welch at GE. You know, he had this big, sprawling, complicated bureaucracy that just simply couldn't get anything done. And he went in, and he didn't take decades to do it. He went in and started making bold moves to turn it around. And I think that's what the American people are looking for, is bold moves. Is that what you heard when you were speaking to them in the polling efforts?
It's things like, you know, it's really hard to like get feedback on exactly what they want. Mm-hmm. But they overwhelmingly support almost every part of the Trump platform. And they're constantly not getting what they want. Just an example is the debt ceiling stuff that comes up every 3 or 6 months. And every time we ask, Republicans are like, nope, shut it down. Burn that thing to the ground. We want spending cuts. And it's like Speaker Johnson's like, oh, gee, golly gee, guys, it's hard, and kicks the can. And that makes Republicans really mad. And then they also totally understand the asymmetry and how things are fought here. I forget the exact numbers, but we asked, how effective is the Republican Party or the Democrat Party at getting their candidates elected? And Republicans say the Democrats are more effective, and the Democrats say the Democrats are more effective. Mm-hmm. But the problem is that also when you ask like generic ballot questions, Republicans win just as much as Trump, because Republican voters have no other option.
Right.
Ultimately, it comes down to turnout, though. So Trump, for twice now, has turned out way more than any other Republican in history. And I think there's probably a lot of people in D.C. who are looking around at the next 4 years and saying, well, it's going to be chaotic, but we can hunker down And then maybe we can run a DeSantis in 28 and get back to the sane voices like Romney. I'm not saying that's what he is. I'm saying that's probably how he's viewed in D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And if Republicans don't play ball and help Donald Trump in this election, I don't think they're going to win for a very, very, very long time. And maybe they don't care. I don't know. But that is my warning to them.
Yeah, it's my feeling that the ones that are really resistant to Trump's agenda, to the American people's agenda, that are just, you know, have tremendous power within the party, but don't have an ideology aligned with their voting base, don't have maybe any ideology other than collecting cash. I don't think they have, they're not committed to the agenda, but if they don't get committed, they may be facing more pressure from their committee members and from the voters who are going to say exactly that. We're not electing you again. Now that's bad for the country.
Here's a really good example. Mm-hmm. If you ask Republicans in D.C., I'm pretty sure that they would overwhelmingly support Nikki Haley over Donald Trump. But we actually asked the voters, and when we pit Donald Trump against Biden, Trump won back in January, won by 8 points. And then when we pit Nikki Haley against Biden, she lost by a significant margin, and she only got 55% of the Republican vote. So that dog doesn't hunt.
No. And I just don't think it's going back. I don't think they're going to be able to put the Republican voter back in a box where they say, listen, if you raise an issue, we're going to call you a name and then you're going to be sad. So you simply have to let the country burn to the ground. What I've said is the strategy that's been deployed by the Republican Party for the last four decades is what I call polite surrender, right? We don't want to offend any leftist. We don't want to offend the communists. We don't want to offend the lunatics with needles and knives chasing children around. So let's just be polite and let the country disappear. And
be a good community member.
Yes. And mm-hmm. I think that's over. I don't think the American people have any appetite for that now. You think that's right?
Yeah. I think we asked who's the biggest enemy facing America.
Mm-hmm.
And China, Iran, Russia, the Democrat Party, the Republican Party, or domestic extremists. And the Democrat Party is the plurality winner among all voters, and it wins by a really big plurality among Republican voters. It's actually a majority of people who watch watch Newsmax. The MSNBC viewers, of course, say the Republican Party by almost a half, too. But yeah, they don't want you to go down there and shake hands. They think that the Democrat Party is destroying the country.
Oh, they do. Here's another extension of that. As we talked about some of these candidates that have been run by Republican parties at the local and state and national level, what we've described it as on this show and on other venues, a product with no features, meaning that they get these folks running for school board or running for town council or running for some state position. They tell them, whatever you do, don't talk about the issues. Pretend to be a soft Democrat. Mm-hmm. That way you won't offend the Democrats and independents, and you might actually get some to vote for you. Of course, we haven't seen any of those candidates win ever. So
not one of those candidates wins. They don't win.
But it seems to be a Republican strategy, though, to run on nothing. You know, when you're talking to the polling, you know, you're hearing people talk about issues. That's what you're telling us. You can't win with a product that has no features, a politician that has no meaningful positions, politicians who run and then do nothing in office. I mean, how far off am I on this?
No, you're right. You're actually validating stuff I've heard. Listen, I haven't been able to poll too many congressional districts. Generally, there's not a lot of money on the right for independent polling. If there's polling done at all, it's, you know, you got to take the Republican deal, right, and go with their pollster. So that's one of the things I've heard, is that anytime a MAGA candidate shows up, the establishment guys will laugh at them or say, no, you can't flip that seat, or they're going to undermine your campaign, or they're going to tell you you have to take the deal and here's our consulting package. So I've heard a lot of that. And actually, I did go to I went to a party meeting once just to smell around and see what was going on in New Jersey. And what you're saying is exactly what I saw. It's like, oh, cool. What are you running on? Well, we're not the Democrat. It's like, okay, well, you know, this was like in the middle of a supply chain crisis and prices were at their absolute peak increase. And, you know, there was a whole lot of tranny stuff in the news. And I'm like, well, don't you think there's voters that want to hear about that stuff? And they're like, well, whatever, you know. And I haven't looked. I don't, like, I know I predicted a massive rightward shift in New Jersey, and it even exceeded what I calculated. And I haven't had a chance to look at what the impact is going to be on the state legislature there, but I'm assuming it'll be the same thing everywhere else, is modest, if any, down ballot pickups.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And, you know, the election integrity issue comes up again. You know, I believe that this too big to rig concept is what actually happened. I think the 18 million voters didn't show up because at the final analysis, the folks who control our voting system that way said, we can't put 18 million fakes into this time. You've got all these demographics supporting Trump. We're not just going to be facing the proverbial Caucasian male supranational racist. You know, that is not going to work in Dearborn. That's not going to work among the Bangladeshis in Queens. It's not going to work amongst the Jewish and Arab populations, both of whom had turned away from the Democrat Party to Donald Trump. And I say Donald Trump, I don't think they've turned to the Republican Party. I think that's consistent with your comments, right? It's not that. So what I can continue to think, and it's, I love this conversation with you because you can help me validate or invalidate some of this, but that what they have here is an opportunity. Trump laid out fantastic coattails that did bring some people along. In Pennsylvania, we won some races that we never expected to win. Those were on Trump's coattails. But you've got this opportunity as the Republican Party then to say, we have an ideology and an agenda we could get behind, or we could just be the establishment hacks we've always been. If we go down the ideology standpoint, then maybe we can create a sustainable movement. Maybe we can make the party relevant in places like Philadelphia and other places again. But if we want to just be these establishment hacks, we're going to lose the voter. We're going to lose the support. We're not going to get any of the, we're not going to begin winning back lost territory. Because it's not the party that people voted for. They voted for Donald Trump.
That's right. You're 100% right. This is like a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to reform the Republican Party. I think every sign is good so far. I think Trump, based on the transition team he's put together and the type of things he's... I mean, just the stuff coming out of RFK's mouth is absolutely mind-blowing. So going in there with a culture not of like, okay, I'm an outsider and I have to acclimate to the way things are done here, it is coming in with a very aggressive attitude about the kinds of changes they want to make. And that's good. That's strong, powerful leadership. And I don't want to paint too rosy of a picture, because there's a lot. I mean, even if they get the appointments they want through and then somehow figure out how to hire 5,000 to 10,000 patriots in D.C., which is a big question mark, right? And then figure out how to dismantle the entrenched parts of the administrative state without upsetting all of these horse carts. That's another big if. You still have the situation that ultimately all of D.C. is completely aligned against changing the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
The conservative thought leadership, all the lobbyist interests, all of these NGOs, they all want things to stay the same.
Well,
and so mm-hmm. it's going to be touch and go, and they're going to need a lot of help. And it's a movement. It's growing. But this isn't just about reforming the Republican Party. It's about taking over occupied territory on the Potomac.
It is. It's an occupied city. And, it feeds on this endless supply of printed cash. They don't have to print it anymore. They just move digits in accounts. It is effectively a digital currency with a paper trading platform for people to use out in the street. You think about the money that's been pushed into the NGOs to traffic children. It's huge amounts of money, billions of dollars, to traffic children and labor to support the cartel's mission of bringing all these foreign nationals in at great profit. You know, they hand them to the NGOs. They hand them to the firms that are doing the privately managed warehousing operations down on the border, where they bring in children, clean them up a little bit, and then they put them on a plane and ship them off to some other part of the country and lose track of them. That machine is a giant cash cornucopia for thousands and thousands of people. And it's a big machine. It is all based in D.C.
Yeah, let's list the machines. You're underselling the arrayed forces against changing the status quo.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just the drug cartels.
Mm-hmm.
It's the trafficking. It's the entire pharmaceutical industry. It's Big Ag. It's big fast food. Do you think McDonald's is going to let RFK go ahead and force them to use tallow again instead of vegetable oil? It is all of these massive companies that put all of literally the entire center of the grocery store might be affected by this stuff. It's all of D.C. It's the military industrial complex. It's the United States intelligence state, because 51 former intel leaders certainly made their vote back in 2020. That's what Donald Trump is up against. And I'll tell you what, you talk about the economic aspect of it. This is something I don't think a lot of people are talking about. I do think that Donald Trump's platform will be good for the middle class to bring back some manufacturing and rebuild the middle class and maybe upset some of this massive shift in wealth inequality we've had by the totally progressive system of taxation and the way in which wealthy people can. I think it'll be good. But let's also acknowledge that the stock market is at really high price to earnings ratios. The housing market is higher than it's ever been. There's a lot of opportunity for economic crash here. The yield curve just uninverted. And so that signals an impending recession. And then the key cornerstone of his entire agenda is mass-scale deportation. Now, I don't know if he's going to deport everybody, but if he deports 10, 20, 30, 40,000 people, that's a hit to GDP. And not only that, these people have, a lot of them live places. That's going to actually maybe cause a real estate crash. And then some of them have debt, and all that debt is assets on banking balance sheets.
Mm-hmm.
So but deflation is really good for the average American. It's really bad for billionaires and politicians who can no longer inflate away the debt. And so what he's talking about, the key of his agenda, we'll have to see, but it is something that might be, I don't know the right word. It's not cataclysmic. It is, certainly chaotic, but it is, it'll be a really crazy time. And I think the voters are asking for that, right? They don't want the spending. They don't want the status quo to continue. They don't like globalization and offshoring. I even had a strong majority of Americans agreeing that the Great Replacement was a key component of the Democrat platform. They think they're being replaced. So, you know what I mean? It's like Donald Trump has a mandate of the people. He doesn't have the mandate of D.C. A rock and a hard place are about to meet for the next 4 years.
And you've been watching this.
Immovable force in the.
Yeah. And you've been, sort of real time seeing this transition and all these unique demographics as you've been talking to these folks over time. So, you've watched the American people awaken to what's being done to them, right? I mean, it's got to be fascinating for you to sit at Rasmussen and watch this happen.
Yeah, in our numbers, Hillary Clinton, Donald Trump took 12% of the black vote against Hillary Clinton. In my polling right now, 25 to 30%.
Yeah.
Hillary Clinton won over 40% among Hispanic voters. In my final cross tabs, Trump won Hispanics by 5. 18 to 39-year-olds, I think he was pretty close to tie this time. Hillary Clinton won him by 30, 40 points. So, yeah.
So let's
an inexorable shift.
All right, so there's one demographic that we've been befuddled by, right, which is some of the different Christian religious groups, right, and how they have either not voted. Or... And one group, and we've got some folks on the phone to help figure that out, is the Catholic vote. And what we've heard is that the Catholic vote this time was much stronger for Trump than it was 4 years ago, that the Catholic vote kind of turned around. So on the line, we have a gentleman named Joe Rooney. And Joe, you ran for state rep candidate here in Philadelphia, right?
In Montgomery County.
Oh, Montgomery County. Okay.
In Abington Township, part of Upper Dublin and Rockledge.
Oh, okay.
That's what the specific area was.
And so we asked Joe and his friend Michael McLaughlin to call in because I was talking to Michael about the penetration of the Catholic market here and how they got more support. So Joe, would you just tell us a moment, as you were campaigning and seeing what happened, what did you see amongst that community of which you're a part? What did you see as you were out there in the field and hearing from Catholics?
Sure. First, I'm also just a local chairman in Abington Township. It's called ATRO, and we have a fair number of Catholics just in our little local GOP organization.
Mm-hmm.
And I really appreciate the discussion that you all were just having, because I agree with almost all of it, and it's really fascinating to hear the numbers that you were talking about as far as Hispanics and Blacks and the different age groups. It's a fascinating thing that Trump has brought in. I'd just like to add one little thing that I didn't hear mentioned. I understand that it's a vote for Trump, but he was supported by the whole Republican Party, at least what I know of it, in Montgomery County and Abington Township.
Mm-hmm.
People worked very hard to get that Republican vote out, making phone calls, letters, outside of my own little campaign. Everybody that I'm associated with
mm-hmm.
worked their tails off after what we saw happened in 2020.
Okay.
Now, I know that's not really in the Catholic part of it, but
that
really paid a lot into it.
Oh, yeah. The Trump Force 47 movement, the you know, people that got out and knocked doors and did, it was incredible.
Yep.
It was incredible.
Yep.
So that's not, when we say that the Republican Party is full of resistance, we're not talking about those folks. We're talking about the people that are...
I'm talking about the centralized entrenched leadership.
Exactly.
Yes.
Yep.
The
people...
I understand.
They come out, they'll go to a room full of Trump supporters and say, we support Donald Trump. And then they leave that room and do nothing to help him get this done. The reason the Republican Party supported Trump the way you described, Joe, which is spot on, is because Trump drove his campaign through the middle of the party this time, not on a parallel track.
Great. I agree with you completely on that. Yep. So from my perspective, and I have to tell you right off the bat, I'm a practicing Catholic. I go down and pray outside of an abortion clinic down in Philadelphia, and I fully support the pregnancy centers and stuff like that. Kamala Harris is the antithesis of what people like me think should be in our government. And I understand Joe Biden professes to be a Catholic and says he goes to church, and I can't question his soul, but I certainly can question the policies that he put in place and his choice of Harris for a VP. So what's important to us, I mean, certainly the pro-life movement, the idea that they've come out actively against, you know, pro-life pregnancy centers where you actually give women an option. And I don't know everything, but there are articles or commercials on TV. They actually talk about 70% of women who get an abortion seem forced into doing it. Well, we're trying to reach out and help those people.
Mm-hmm.
And she is not. I was at the pro-life march in Washington, D.C., and it was 20, either 19 or 20, when Donald Trump spoke at the pro-life march. Ronald Reagan didn't do it. George W. didn't do it. George H.W. didn't do it. Donald Trump did. Kamala Harris went and visited an abortion clinic.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, my gosh, man.
They had a mobile unit at the convention.
I have to tell you, if you haven't been to one of these, and I don't want to sound like a nut, okay, but 777 Apple Tree or down at 12th and Locust, these are evil places. I'm telling you, they're dark places. My wife went with me once, and she won't go again. We're not here to talk about that, but
well, Joe,
Kamala Harris.
Before you shift away, have you ever visited Magnolia Women's Center? It's a crisis pregnancy center. This is.
I don't know Magnolia, but we just bought one down at 12th and Locust, right across the street from Planned Parenthood. It's just this woman, Marie Joseph, did an unbelievable job.
Mm-hmm.
They are truly saintly people. So I'm sorry I don't know the Magnolia one, but I do know the one that we have down.
Well, in your travels, if you get a chance to step in and meet Melissa Aguilera at Magnolia, she's been on the show a couple times. She's been at our town halls. She's fabulous.
Yeah.
And what they're building, it's a new one, and it's surrounded by four abortion mills, and she's really out in enemy territory. But boy, they've put together a beautiful facility, and they're doing great work, and we love them.
God bless them. Where is it? Can you tell me that, just roughly?
Franklin Avenue? I don't know the address.
It's in Philadelphia?
Head. Yeah, it's in Philly.
Okay. I'll look it up. I'm happy to support them, too. So, and I know you asked me, but just little stuff as we talk to people. It was notable that she didn't go to the Al Smith dinner. I mean, all politicians go to that thing. They make fun of each other. You know, Cardinal Dolan's there. The fact that she skipped that is really shocking, you know, the truth. And I'm a member of the Knights of Columbus. She has come out multiple times against judges projected appointees, you know, people who are nominated, and questioned their loyalty, patriotism, professionalism, because remember the KSC. I mean, these are pretty straight daggers right at our Catholic faith, our Catholic fraternity, if that makes sense.
Sure.
To you.
And so what you're saying is that the reason we saw this shift in Catholic voting, which I think has happened. I've been hearing about it. I've been reading about it. You're saying, A, it's real, and B, it's driven by these issues, by this anti-Catholic behavior. You know, everybody saw that Gretchen Whitmer, not everybody, I'm sure, that Gretchen Whitmer photograph where she had a woman on her knees in front of her and she's feeding her Dorito.
Yeah, with the Doritos.
I forgot until you brought that up. That was shocking. It was shocking.
So here's my question.
They're
then.
Putting this stuff out, and they're putting this stuff out there and promoting it like they're either tone deaf or they don't care, and that's what we get out of it.
Oh, I think it's very purposeful. I don't think this is accidental or poor behavior. Yes, this is purposeful. They're sending messages.
Well, don't underestimate how incompetent the staff they're hiring is. Did you see that staff picture of the Kamala Harris social media? It was like 12. It's literally out of like Reddit central casting. It's like 25-year-olds with gender studies degrees. And it's the same thing that's happening to entertainment. So, I mean, they're trying their best, but they are not the best people. And so I think there is a mix of like intention and then complete incompetence.
Okay.
I think everybody's going to throw Kamala Harris under the bus. But let's be real. Biden lost this election for her, and everybody gave her the ball to run with it, knowing that she's not a running back. I mean, like, what do you expect her to do? She wasn't playing with a complete. Let me talk about the religion stuff real quick, because we poll more about that than any other topic, any other pollster. We actually just did a dedicated poll not too long ago on Christians in America and the impact on the election. It's like 2 weeks old. It's sponsored. People can go get the RasmussenReports.com, get the cross tabs. Yep. And there's this research out there that this guy George Barna is putting out, and it really blackpilled a lot of people over the last weeks about how, look, all these evangelical Christians say they're not going to turn out. There's millions sitting on the sideline, and they could win this. Well, that is not what my poll found at all. In fact, I think Christians were one of the biggest forces here.
Yep.
Now, I can tell you, we separated them into evangelical, Protestant, and Catholic based on self-ID.
Uh-huh.
And Catholics didn't go for Trump nearly as much. I mean, Trump won by 35 points among evangelical Christians, but he was roughly tied among Protestants. So, you know, same Bible, right?
Yep.
Same biblical truths, but for some reason, those people voted like they were in two totally different religions. And I will say Trump was winning among Catholics in that poll by upper single digits, I think maybe 10 points. But then you have the whole thing. It's like, okay, how many of them actually go to church and are practicing?
Yeah.
And the more people say they go to church, the more Trumpy they are, 100%. So I wasn't able to pick up, to be honest with you, in the polls, whether things like the Al Smith dinner actually had any impact whatsoever.
Okay.
Because it's even hard enough to measure how much of an impact RFK had. But it's like one more in a list of 100 things that secured a Donald Trump win.
Yes.
And it's like it didn't have to be that way. She could have gone to the Al Smith dinner. She could have courted religious voters. And instead, she threw him under the bus. And if you want to hear the sickest thing out of my polling, is that Kamala Harris won more among atheists than even among Democrats.
Wow.
So there is a very big spiritual battle component to this.
So
that is not at all surprising to anyone who's been paying attention to the priorities of these folks.
So
the polling agrees with that, I guess. So
that's right. Cool. There it is. So, Joe, here's my question, though, Joe, is this. So, you know, Mark's observations for polling are it's invaluable.
Absolutely.
You were on the front lines. You're on the front lines, though. Was there a specific outreach in your campaign or in your volunteer base or with the Trump campaign, a specific activity? Were you calling and knocking doors specifically targeting Catholics? Or do you think it was really just, as Michael McLaughlin puts it, Harris was just the gift that keeps giving? She just drove Catholics away. Was it both?
Working with Mike, we did have a couple of meetings with Catholics for Trump just in our area, Northeast Philly and in Abington Township. And we'd get about 10, 15 people came in. And then before the election, we went out and we did some. Well, I asked everybody that I could, and I wrote to them and said, look, you can't just do it yourself. You got to get your family. You have to get And you have to get your friends, the people you think might vote or won't vote. And this really is, I mean, I don't know how much more grassroots we can get than this, but the focus for all of us was basically you can't just vote. You got to bring some people with you. And then before the election, we went out and we've been doing phone calls to people to make sure if they've got their mail-in ballots that they get them in. And then we went out and canvassed just the churches on Sunday just before the election. So I can't tell you that it was a giant effort or well-organized, but it was locally organized, and I'm just assuming it was in other places because most of this stuff has been granular and internally driven. It didn't come from the Trump campaign. You know, I mean, I'm working on my own, and we've got a little bit in Montgomery County and a little bit in Northeast Philly. I really think, like that gentleman just said, he drove a truck through the middle of America and people jumped on board. Mm-hmm. I agree with that comment. I know I paraphrased it, but that's what I think it was.
Joe, I agree with you. I think another thing that people aren't recognizing is that President Trump reached into communities that would have never gotten on board with part of the election. And I speak definitely for West Philly. That's what you hear. Like his message went all the way to West Philadelphia on 63rd Street, and people resonated with what he was doing and what he was saying.
It's beautiful.
It really is. This whole conversation, this whole second hour has been around this. How did this happen almost, right? How did he reach these people? It was messaging. It was the marketing skill. But it was selling a product with features. It was saying, these are the policies. Here's what happened when I implemented them. You want them to happen again. You got to come out and vote.
Real grassroots, too.
And grassroots. Huge grassroots efforts. I mean, what we have to do now, I think, anybody involved in all these processes and analyzing them, we all now have to sit down and look at the model that was just exhibited, executed incredibly. And we have to say, the old model is broken. Running these squishy, useless candidates is not going to work. And hiding from issues like pornography in the schools is not going to work, right? and now we have only about 4 minutes left, but we also have on the line Mike McLaughlin, who is Catholic and has been deeply involved in that effort. Michael, welcome to the Conservative Voice.
Welcome, everybody. Now, glad to be talking to you.
You've been listening to this conversation. Can you give us some of your personal insights? We're down to just about 3.5 minutes. Can you give us some of your personal insights as to what you saw as you were working in the Catholic community in Philadelphia?
Well, look, anybody that's a practicing Catholic, like Joe Rooney and myself, we know intuitively you cannot vote for Kamala Harris. And I have a 16-year-old daughter, and she's studying to get her driver's license. And everybody that has a driver's license knows that you stop at a red light.
Mm-hmm.
You don't drive through a red light. And so, you know, the old parable of the red light, the yellow amber light, proceed with caution, or green light. Well, Kamala's a red light. You don't need a Harvard degree in political science to figure this out. You cannot, as a Catholic, vote for her, period. There's no exceptions.
And so you're saying, I quoted you earlier saying she was sort of the gift that keeps giving. She just drove Catholics away.
Well, like Joe touched upon how she disrespected a tradition. And I think anecdotally, the last guy that blew that off was Mondale in 1984, alluding to the Al Smith dinner and how that worked out for Mondale. So, you know, to disrespect Catholics, overtly disrespect Catholics. Now, this isn't even subtle. It's not smart politically. And to the improvement with Trump from 2020 is 18% with Catholics. And that's a good number. That's a good margin. And everything with Trump was on the margins. And I have very liberal friends who mocked me and laughed at me and said, you're out of your mind. Kamala has this thing in the bag. And I said, listen, you have confirmation bias. You just don't get it. She will not win.
Yeah.
Period. It's not just because of Catholics. It's multiple. It's like a death by a thousand paper cuts. She was not going to win. And I was confident in saying that. I predicted 312 for electoral college vote. I don't know what he's at now, but, you know.
It'll be
312. It's irrelevant. Right. I'm not a rocket scientist. Everybody predicted that. You know, but again, getting back to my daughter, she's 16. So these things are pretty keep it simple, stupid kind of philosophy. You know, when you're practicing for your driver's license, and I guess you know, it's been so long I have my driver's license. You get in there with the state trooper, and he's taking you around for a little drive, and if there's a red light and you go through it, he's going to flunk you. So you can't drive through red lights.
Right.
A red light. If you're Catholic, you don't vote for her.
It's a great metaphor. It makes great sense. And I think we've kind of come to that conclusion then that it was, in fact, that they were Catholics were accessed like everybody else. They simply were reacting to what they saw as the candidate and the policies. Now, we've got about a minute left, and I want to make sure to thank some folks. So first of all, Mike McLaughlin, thank you for helping us get connected up. Having you on, Joe Rooney, that was helpful. I mean, really great to get your insights, you know, especially because you're on the front lines. We appreciate that. Mark Mitchell from Rasmussen Reports. I use Rasmussen Reports all the time. You should go there and follow it. That's where I tracked, for example, the understanding the American people had that there was fraud in the system, because it was your polling, Mark, that allowed me to demonstrate what I believed I saw. Ada Nestor on X, the conservative voice on X. Thank you, Mina, for joining us. And thank you all for listening. This was another episode of The Conservative Voice on WWDB AM 860, and we will see you next week.